Well, welcome home. We are so glad to have you gathering with us today. It is an honor to get the opportunity to share together. I'm joined by my lovely wife, Rebecca.
Hi.
Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today.
It is an honor. And in light of this Valentine's Day, Rebecca and I thought we would take a moment and share with you a few things that we're learning as it relates to our relationship. If you're new here with us, I want to let you know that we're a church where everyone's welcome because nobody's perfect and anything's possible. And we really do hope that our time together would help you take one step closer to Jesus today. And we do this from time to time, really twice a year. We slow down, we get an opportunity to connect together. And we're going to talk about relationships. And it's always interesting to me because I think that when it comes to relationships, we have this vision in our mind, this beating passion in our heart of what it will look like or what we think it is looking like, when in reality, sometimes that's just not true.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we have a vision for what we think marriage and family life will be like, but often day to day, it is nothing like that at all.
Nothing like, you think our marriage is, I'm just kidding. I saw this, by the way, when it comes to pastors in 2020, that 2020 was such a challenging year, and so many pastors, they saw themselves looking one way, when reality, how they looked to their congregation or their church family was quite different another way.
Absolutely. I feel this tremendously. I love to exercise. I know many people in this room like to exercise. Running in particular is one of my favorite things to do, and I don't get a chance to do it very much these days, but when I do, I think I look like this, but in reality, I actually look like this or that because I don't get to do it very often, you know, and so it's not my best performance.
Absolutely, and I actually went running this past week with my daughter, and she was in front of me, she's seven, and she said, "Dad, I'm born fast," and then she looked at me as I was huffing and puffing and said, "Dad, you are born slow." I thought, all right, we're not bringing her back home. That's it. The same thing, though, occurs with our relationships.
Yes.
When it comes to marriage, you think you look like a certain way. You find yourself with this envision on the season of your marriage as you are staring at each other and the lights piercing through. And it's this perfect, idyllic Hallmark moment. But the truth is, in between the hours of 7 o'clock until whenever you go to bed, often you look more like this. And that's more of the truth. The best version of ourselves, whether you have kids or you don't have kids, doesn't always come out between 6:30 and whatever time you go to bed. And that's the reality. That's kind of the reality. And those are the seasons that we go through. So here's what we thought we would do today. Maybe you're married and maybe you're not married. Maybe you are curious as to what it looks like to have a stronger relationship. What we're going to look at today, I think applies to relationships in all seasons, whether it's a relationship of a friendship or some relationship in your family or even in your workplace. But particularly for us, we're going to look at it through the lens of marriage because we think it's so important. We didn't grow up in a setting where a local church talked that much about marriage. We really didn't see a lot of a couple who loves Jesus and who loves the local church and who believes in fighting for a marriage take time to share. And so that's what we want to do. We want to share with you a few relationship goals that have been helpful for us. We're always learning, and we hope they'll be helpful for you.
Absolutely. So this whole idea of having a vision for your marriage and your relationship and then reality oftentimes being very different reminds me of something that happened at Christmas a few years ago. Totally unintentionally, a husband in our family got his wife a gift, a shirt, and she loved the shirt. She thought, "This is so great, thank you." And then she noticed the tag. The size was just a little small for her. And so what did she say? She said, "Oh, honey, thank you so much for your gift. I see that you have a vision for me, right? You
and
have
I remember
a vision of what I'm going to look like."
I remember holding it up and saying, "Whoa, you got a vision for me."
And I think that's, you know, a lot of us are in that circumstance where we have a vision for ourselves, even our personal selves. We have a vision for our family, for our marriage, et cetera. And then oftentimes, you know, that vision is challenged by reality, and it can be the most challenging thing in our relationship to you know, bring those two things together.
Absolutely. And that's why it's important to say we have goals, whether they're spoken or unspoken. Unmet expectations lead to frustrations all the time. And we really don't get on the same page of what are the goals. You have goals in your work life. You have goals for physical fitness. You have goals for your parenting. But what about relationship goals? And so we want to share with you a few relationship goals that have been important for us.
Yeah, the number one relationship goal that I have learned, I would say, really, in our relationship has been making caring for my soul, or what you might hear referred to as soul care, a top priority. We oftentimes in our culture make caring for our bodies a top priority, and our bodies are a priority, but so is our soul. And we, I think, often neglect that. And so we are not just bodies, but we have a soul, and our soul is important to who we are. And honestly, one of the very best gifts that we can give our spouse is to be healthy, a healthy me. And in my marriage and in our relationship, one of the areas that's made a major difference is taking care of my own soul. And in particular, one of the areas that I've had to grow in soul care is cultivating a life of contentment. Now, for many years early in our marriage, I was very discontent. Now, you may not have known that, you know, if you would meet me on the street or see me in church or have a conversation with me, you know, I would seem like everything's going great, it's fine. But internally, you know, I don't even think I was fully aware of it at the time, but internally, I was pretty discontent. And if you looked at my life, you would say, well, what are you discontent with? And it's, you know, hard for me to even admit it sometimes because it seems so shallow, but it was absolutely true. I was discontent with the vision I had for what my family would look like in terms of what house we would live in, how it would be decorated, how it would be run, even the size of it. And in reality, my circumstances were very different. You know, we lived in 800 square feet, little tiny condo in San Diego in the middle. So we had one window in the living room that didn't let in very much light. It was kind of like a dark dungeon.
It was the cave.
Yeah, the cave. And I spent so much of my time thinking about how it could be better. What could I do? What little bit more?
But you loved the couches.
I hated the couches. The couches were awful. They were this bonded leather, and the leather was peeling off.
You sure that wasn't true leather?
It was terrible. Yeah, it was terrible. Sean tried to convince me it was real leather, and it obviously was not. So what I'm trying to get at is that internally, my soul was very discontent. I would daydream about what it could be. And even though my home was perfectly comfortable, it had everything that I need, I had a wonderful relationship. I think what I did, because I was so discontent internally, is I kind of did some damage to our relationship, in that I probably made you feel it's not good enough. You're not providing enough. I want more, more, more. You know, and if I just get a little bit more, that will make me happy, when that's not true. Apostle Paul writes to his protege, Timothy, who was younger than him, trying to give him some wisdom. And he says some really powerful words in 1 Timothy 6:6. It says, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." Now, what does contentment mean? Contentment is a word of the soul. Okay, it tells us about something that's going on internally. Contentment speaks to a posture of being satisfied in the goodness of God, sustained in the grace of God, and trust in the timing of God. Contentment speaks to a practice of seeing less as more. In other words, something more, right, more to my house, more to my surroundings, isn't actually more. That's not actually going to bring me what I want it to bring. Outwardly, I craved a beautiful setting. I had a vision of a setting for a happy family and happy marriage. But the truth is that the outward craving for a beautiful setting was a symptom of a soul that was discontent. Mm-hmm. It wasn't enough. So in order for me to have that vision of the happy family and the happy marriage, I needed a soul that was calm and content with what I had. And I love this quote from Charles Spurgeon. He says, "You say, if I had a little more, I should be very satisfied. You make a mistake. If you are not content with what you have, you would not be satisfied if it was doubled. It's just such a powerful saying, I think, because it's so true. I've witnessed it in my own life. And I didn't realize at the time, but our greatest struggle in marriage had come from our personal discontents. You know, you had your own journey or have your own journey. Yeah. So you have your own personal discontentment. That was mine. I've had others since then. So it's not just about physical things. It can be about other things too. Yeah. But having a soul that is craving more, 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 more really hurt us.
Yeah.
So caring for my soul. Now, how did I do that, right? How did I turn to the Lord to care for my soul? So one of the things I did, and this is a very, you know, practical thing that you can do, is I started sitting in my little dark living room, you know, with one window, and I literally asked God out loud to give me eyes to see the beauty that was around me. And so I would sit and I would just look at the things that at one time I thought weren't good enough, now slowly over the course of 2 years started to become more and more beautiful. They started to become enough just as they were. And it has become almost a daily practice now, not just in my physical surroundings, but in many things, relationships, children, etc., to ask myself this question, which I find to be really helpful. Would life really be better if, fill in the blank, with whatever you think you need more? If I had granite countertops, if the chairs in my living room matched, if I had more art on the walls or a different bedspread, or, you know, fill in the blank with whatever, would life really be better? And the truth is, most of the time, it wouldn't be. It'd be just as good, right? It's seeing the beauty that's already there. So if I can leave one thing for this section, it would be a discontent wife will cultivate a discontent marriage, and a discontent husband will cultivate a discontent marriage. So learning to care for our souls, learning contentment, has been one of the greatest gifts, I think, for our marriage.
So true.
Recently.
It's so true. And I want to agree with everything you said. We used to think something else was the greater struggle in our marriage. And yes, communication is important and finances and so on and so forth. But, and I just think this is true. Discontentment has done more damage. It has created more struggles. And now I think about this in terms of marriages. Maybe the issue isn't finance, it's discontentment.
It's discontent.
Maybe the issue isn't pornography, it's discontentment. Maybe the issue isn't that we want a different whatever perceived to be life because we think then we'll have arrived. Maybe it's just discontentment.
Yeah.
So, and I thank you because soul keeping in many ways is healthy marriage keeping, and you've done the work and our family has benefited from that.
Thank you.
And I'm always learning from you. The next relationship goal I'll bring your attention to is this, just building a marriage on a foundation of faith. We believe that God created us and loves us, that Jesus Christ rose from the dead for us, and that we can have life in him, forgiveness of sins, adoption into his family. And for us, that's so important. And too often, I think we build our marriages on our finances, on our achievements, on our dreams, rather than on the firm foundation of faith in Jesus. Yeah. And so in Matthew chapter 7, this is what Jesus says at the end of something called the Sermon on the Mount. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, puts them into practice, is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. The rain comes down, the streams rose, the windows blew and beat against the house. Yet it did not fall because it had a foundation on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who builds his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and they beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. And the question we've learned to ask is, what's the foundation of our house? We can have a house that's built on a foundation of faith, or we can have a house that's built a different way. Our culture tells us, take your hobbies, put them first.
Yes.
Next, if you happen to have kids, why don't you put your kids second? And then maybe somewhere around there, you could put your spouse third. And if you have some orientation of faith, maybe put that last. The kingdom way is put Jesus first, and secondly, you're going to put your spouse, and then you'll put your children, and then hobbies, and whatever the case may be. And the greatest gift that you give to your marriage is ultimately a healthy relationship mm-hmm. with God. And this is the thing. I mean, this is what we're striving to. And oftentimes we fail so much. We want Jesus to be the center of our marriage. Mm-hmm. In Matthew chapter 22, Jesus is asked, what's the greatest commandment? He replies, this is it. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And here's what I think I want to share with us that's so important, and we're still learning this.
Yeah.
The more you love God, the more capacity you have to love each other.
That is so true.
Let me just say that again. The more you love God, the more capacity you have to love each other. And so I'll just say this, that ways that we do that practically is mm-hmm. we worship together on our Sunday gatherings.
Yeah.
For us, it's not about the kids. It's not about the style of worship. It's not about our relationships. Ultimately, we've come to this conclusion. We need to have our souls worshiping God because we're in worship wars when it comes to our marriage.
Yes.
And there are things that are always competing for our marriage. And it's so important for us. One of my favorite times mm-hmm. when we get to do this is just getting to sit in the front and sing together and remind mm-hmm. ourselves of the goodness of God.
Yeah.
We practice that in our finances. We put God first in the way that we organize and steward our resources. And we attempt to put God first in the way that we align our values. And I've learned this, that if you really want to be a husband that leads well, and I struggle with this, and I've made plenty of mistakes, I need to be a lead repenter. Mm-hmm. My wife, my family needs to hear me say, I'm sorry, I blew it. I could have done that better. Mm-hmm. I recognize I'm imperfect and continually pointing to the sufficiency of Jesus. And I remember sitting with a mentor at Strawberry Factory in New York, and he said this, and it stuck with me. He said, if you don't love your wife, someone else will. Mm-hmm. Let that sink in. If you don't love your wife, someone else will. And I would say, if you don't parent your children, someone else will. If you don't invest in your marriage, someone else will. And I think this is what we've come to learn. If yeah. Jesus is not at the center of our marriage, mm-hmm. something else will be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another relationship goal I think that we have learned over the years is learning to enjoy each other.
Me? Enjoy
yeah.
me?
Okay. Of course I'm going to enjoy you. But I think this is particularly for those who might fall into my category who are more type A, to-do, list-driven people, you know, task-oriented. Oftentimes I fall into the pattern of, you know, just get it done. Get things done. Do what we have to do. Check it off the list. And the Lord has been reminding me more recently that he has given me a spouse and children to enjoy, to actually enjoy. And I can enjoy them while completing my to-do list. It just takes a different shift in the way that I think about it. So to serve, sacrifice, and enjoy your marriage and family is the third relationship goal. When we start off in our relationships, right, we really enjoy spending time together. You go on long dates, you talk on the phone for hours, and
stay up late at night eating frozen yogurt.
yes, we did do that, right? When you're on the phone with someone, you're like, no, you hang up first, or you hang up first, right? That's what you did as a teenager.
It's still the same way.
It's still the same way, right? My guess is for most of us, it is probably not that way. Because over time, what tends to happen is the busyness of life, responsibilities, getting to know our spouse more and maybe finding things that were once cute to us maybe become a little irritating
to
us over time.
Wow, did you see how she looked at me, by the way? I see that.
You know, it can be a struggle or something you work toward purposefully to enjoy each other. And how do we do that? What I have found is the number one way to enjoy each other is really through mutual submission. So, you know, you loving and honoring me loving and honoring you. And in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33, it says, so again, I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband, right? So there's this back and forth, this mutual submission. And this passage is often looked at through a shallow perspective as if Paul is not for marriages, but that's not really the case at all. The Apostle Paul was inspired by the Holy Spirit, and really, he is for the flourishing of our marriages. So mutual submission, really, I believe, is a gateway to a really wonderful, healthy marriage where we can enjoy each other, right? Both people feel respected. Both people feel loved. And then we can enjoy each other when we both feel that way. I need to respect my husband. And when men typically feel disrespected, they disengage from their relationship,
true.
Right?
So true.
They're not involved. They don't want to engage with us at all, right? Because what are they going to get in return?
Yeah.
They're going to get disrespect. So men, I'm speaking to you right now. You need to love your wife like Jesus loved the church. You know, women were to respect our husbands. Men love their wives. He served the church and was willing to sacrifice for the church. A husband and wife must function like two wings on the same bird. What kind of bird are we?
An eagle. Straight eagle. That's what we
They must work together in partnership or the marriage will never get off the ground, right? What happens then is that home becomes a chore. It's something I have to do, and it becomes something that's unenjoyable, which then causes us to disengage even more. Instead, home is meant to be a joy, right? It's meant to be a delight. That doesn't mean it's not gonna be hard sometimes, right? There's gonna be times when the kids go crazy, and you know, I just wanna be alone for a little while. But on the whole, home is meant to be a joy. And we often go through hard seasons when we lose our ability to have fun with each other. And one of the things that we have decided to do to preserve that joy, enjoying each other as a couple and as a family, is every Saturday we take a trip to the Fairhope Park. We load the kids in the car and make sure we have snacks and a movie so they don't get grumpy. And Sean and I just get to talk for 45 minutes on scenic Highway 98 going toward Fairhope. The kids have their things they're doing. Then we go to the park. We play, we go get ice cream at Mr. Jean's Beans, and then we walk around. It has become our Saturday ritual, and it has really helped us enjoy each other.
I think it has, and I would just say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly.
Absolutely.
Because plenty of times that picture she described is, don't make me pull over type of thing. But we're attempting to enjoy each other. The last relationship goal we'll give you is this, and that is remove all exit strategies. Mm-hmm. Remove all exit strategies. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 37, love never gives up. It never loses faith. It always is hopeful and endures through every circumstance. I'm not saying the Bible is not teaching in any way, shape, or form. If you're in an abusive relationship, stay in that. If you have adultery thriving throughout your marriage, that you should stay in that. That's not what we're saying. But we are saying that even last year, with the divorce rates dropping significantly, there is still over 700,000 divorces just in 2020 alone. And I do think oftentimes we are peace fakers or peace breakers rather than peacemakers. And I know for us, we're putting a stake in the ground with God's grace and empowerment, and we wanna remove all exit strategies. And we really see that as a way for us to deepen in our marriage and in our relationship. And that's a commitment that we're making, because love isn't something you fall into and fall out of. Love is not a noun, love is a verb, and it takes work. And so here's what I want to do as we kind of finish today. I want to say something, and I want to just ask if you'll just pray for our relationships. I want to say, and I want you to please hear this, Rebecca, I love you, and I honor you, and I'm so grateful to be your husband. I love Jesus a lot, and I make a lot of mistakes. And with God's help, I want to be a better husband that serves our family well. And I want to see our family have Jesus at the center. And I believe our marriage is worth fighting for.
Thank you.
Will you pray for us?
Yeah. Father, I thank you so much for this opportunity to come and to speak on marriages this morning, to open your word and to see where you have guided us, where you have given us the principles to have healthy marriages, to have marriages that are enjoyable. And each person here is in a different place, whether they be single, they be married, they have a happy marriage, they have a struggling marriage. Lord, you care for every single one of them. And I just pray, Lord, that today they could have an honest look at their relationships, whether it's family, with friends, with other people, Lord. Lord, and they will come to you and that you will give them wisdom on how to proceed, you know, how to enjoy each other, how to remove exit strategies, how to love and respect one another, how to cultivate contentment and take care of their own soul. Lord, I just pray that you would give each one a path to follow as they leave today. They know the next step that they need to take in following you in this area of their life. We thank you that you didn't leave us without guidance, that you have given us your word. You have also given us each other to come alongside of each other and bear each other's burdens. And I pray that we may do that for each other. I thank you for your son, Jesus Christ, and that none of us are perfect, but your Son was, and that he paid the sacrifice for us that we may have new life in you. Lord, you do make all things new. In your name, amen.
Amen.